really the determination to get through things. Because the reason why I always bring up like determination is because a lot of people get hit once by like one failure and they're like, okay, yeah, I'll come back up. Mm-hmm. And they get hit by a second one. They're like, okay, this is a sign that I should just not go through with it. Mm. I think what makes a really great entrepreneur and really successful one by means of wealth or means of growth is like how many times are they willing to get back up after they fail? Mm. And I have failed a lot of times. Like I've sold 3 companies, but I've also failed like 3 or 4 companies, right? Mm. And I think how you measure your wins is not about like how many wins there is, how many like losses you have overcome. Mm. And for me, that's one thing that I've always looked at. Mm-hmm. And by doing so, I'm a lot more positive. Mm. It's like when you start seeing your failures as lessons, you become a lot more optimistic. Mm-hmm. And you're a lot less afraid of failing. Because every failure that I've had in the past few years led to me to do something better in another area. Mm. So having that mindset definitely helped a lot.
Welcome to the Social Ray Podcast, where we highlight inspiring entrepreneurs and social media influencers who've used social media successfully to build their business and follow their passions. Discover the mindsets, strategies, and advice that will help you take your business to the next level. Now, here's your host, Raymond On.
What's up, guys? In this episode, I talk with Jason Wong, who's the CEO of Wong House Ventures, and he's also the founder of the Holy Meme Bible. You guys might have seen some of his products on the internet because he's really good at making his products go viral using Instagram, Twitter, and all the social media platforms. He's a very young entrepreneur. He's in his early 20s, but he's already exited on 3 companies. But, you know, as he shares in this interview, he's been able to do this from a lot of failures and experience. And so a lot of people see Jason and they see the success of how he was able to make these successful brands and businesses, but they don't realize all the work, all the failures, all the, you know, late nights that allowed him to reach the level of success he's at today at such a young age. And also, we talk about his journey as an immigrant, how that was like coming to America without, you know, knowing what America is like, only knowing about it from media, watching shows like Friends and American movies, and how he was able to learn the culture of America through memes. And that's why he founded the Holy Meme Bible, because a lot of these relatable memes was what connected a lot of the world. A lot of people who don't even know America, you know, they know certain memes, and memes are universal. You know, comedy is universal. And so, you know, Jason talks about in this interview how memes are, in a way, their own language, and how that's why he founded the Holy Meme Bible, because a lot of these memes represent a certain iconic event or a certain idea, and he just compiled it all into one coloring book, which is actually pretty genius of him to do. So definitely check Jason out on Instagram at Pug. And also, he has a course out called Build a House, where he teaches you all the secrets and strategies he's used to build and scale multiple 6- and 7-figure businesses. And he has other experts come on and teach as well. So I hope you guys enjoy this interview with Jason Wong. Please make sure to leave a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you found this podcast. And also, if you guys like the show, please support us on Anchor through your donations to keep the show running. So thank you guys for supporting. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy this interview with Jason Wong. All right, hey, Jason. Welcome to the interview. Thanks for coming on. Mm-hmm. And these are some of the products that you've made, and you're the CEO of Wong House Ventures, which is an umbrella company. They have, you know, branches in e-commerce, investing, and marketing as well. And so, and you're 21 years old. You already have this like company with a bunch of products, such as the Holy Meme Bible over here. You have the Meme Bands, which is a meme board game, a cooking book, a lean meme cuisine, Dew Lashes, you know, the ramen condom and all that stuff. So, yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people know you as a person who's, you know, productized memes and stuff like that. But they also, maybe they don't know about your story or how you came up, you know, as a young entrepreneur. And, yeah, I kind of want to start with kind of where did you grow up and where did you kind of, where did you grow up and how was that like?
Right. I was born in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. My mom was a sales, like retail, and then my dad was in construction. So growing up, I wasn't like really influenced by like people in higher education. Mm. So I knew that I wanted to like do something bigger, but I was really bad at school. Mm. So my mom moved me to America after, you know, my parents separated, and that's when I started like dabbling like different cultures. So I lived in like New York, I lived in Indiana, I lived in Florida, lived in Texas, lived in California and Canada. So I dabbled in with so many cultures around, and I would say like that's kind of where I grew up. Like I grew up around the world.
Around the world.
Okay. Yeah.
So where was the longest place you lived in for the longest time, you would say?
I think my longest time during my childhood was probably 4 years in Garden Grove.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was like elementary. I think I went to third grade to sixth grade in Garden Grove. And then everywhere else was like a year or two. Because like when my mom and I first moved here, we didn't really have like a house or like we didn't have a lot of money. So it's just like staying with whoever would take us, like relatives, like aunts and uncles, and like work at their companies and stuff.
How was it like moving around a lot? Because I'm sure like even as a kid, you know, we all want like stability. We all want people we could call friends and like they stay for a long time. But for you, you kind of lived, you know, hopping around everywhere. And I guess, you know, your mom was the one constant. But like how, what was that experience like as a kid? Just seeing all those cultures and kind of, you know, it must have been unstable. And as a kid, you must have felt very kind of like lost maybe at some points and feeling, you know. So like kind of what was that like, you know?
Yeah, it was definitely confusing because when you're at that age where you're like 8 or 9 years old, you're kind of searching for like an identity, right? And then in school, if you're in school and you're trying to fit into a particular group, you want to be that person or you want to be that persona. But when you're moving like six times within the next, you know, few years, you're constantly bouncing between like trying to be someone else to fit in into that particular group. So I was just really confused. And yeah, my mom was that one constant, but growing up, our relationship wasn't like that good. But it's not like it was bad, like, it's more like an Asian relationship. Like it's neutral, like as long as we're not fighting, we're good. But it wasn't like ever like loving. So I saw a lot of comfort in like making new friends, understanding culture, really just immerse myself in the new society in America. And yeah, it was definitely confusing because dabbling like cultures with like rednecks in Florida and then like the New Yorkers and then being in Garden Grove with like the Vietnamese people and the Hispanics, a lot of Hispanic friends, just I was like a melting pot, which is good in hindsight, but at that point, like when you're 8 or 9 years old, it's so confusing. It's like, who am I? Right?
And then did you kind of like over time, how did you develop that, or where did that sense of identity develop, or where did you feel like you kind of found more of who you are?
So the amusing thing was that I kind of found myself after I started being like online a lot more, because when you're on the internet, you're able to see things from like a bird's eye view. Like you're able to dabble in like different communities at any seconds, and you're just like, okay, this is who I actually want to be, and like maybe I can find a community to fit in, rather than like finding a circle and try to become that type of person. So like after I started dabbling in social media when I was 11, I was able to like understand people a lot better, understand the culture, the internet culture, and then I started shaping myself to be more of like a defining personality.
Okay.
And then I just went from there. So I started social media real, real early.
Like, what? How young were you? What was your first platform for social media?
So back in the day, there was like a Chinese forum called G Online, and then their English counterpart was Gaia Online, which where people had like avatar. Do you remember like Gaia Online?
I think I've heard of it.
Yeah.
It sounds like a game though.
Yeah, it's like a forum and like an online game. And then like they have like a Chinese counterpart of it. And when I was 11, and I became the moderator of the entire site. Wow. So it was like people don't know I was 11. Wow. But like when you're online, you can be anyone.
So did you lie or did they know you were 11?
No one really like, cause I was really mature for my age. I think like that's one of the part of the thing about like growing up in so many different cultures that you grew up a lot faster. You see a lot more things and you're able to, I guess, put yourself together a lot better. So online, I was able to become this person that I actually want to be. I was a lot happier online. And I kind of like felt like that was my place. Like the online communities was kind of like where I belong.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of like kids nowadays feel the same way because they, you know, a lot of kids, like maybe their parents are busy working or maybe they're, you know, not absent from the family. And so a lot of them take to the internet. Like majority of kids spend their time online than with family or even friends now, you know. And so, or they make friends online, like you said, and that's where their, you know, community is. And so I think some people call it like raised by the internet.
Yeah.
You know, you felt like you were raised by the internet.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, and then that's perfect for you because like now you're doing memes, which started on the internet. And so kind of like, I mean, can you give us like an idea of what it looks like to be raised by the internet, I guess? Like what that really means?
You know, yeah. Kind of? Well, like in real life, you're surrounded with people your own age. Like you're in school, in grade school, you're with other people that are also 11. But on the internet, you're dabbling with people that are 13, 15, 18. And you're able to see perspectives that you previously couldn't dabble in because, you know, you're just not surrounded by these type of people. So when you're on the internet, you're able to look up a lot more things, gain a lot more information, understand perspectives. And I think overall make me a lot more open, understanding that there's not a single way to think of certain things. So definitely I became a lot more mature. Okay. And understanding, and overall made me less of an introvert. Because it's funny, because a lot of people are like, yeah, I go out to the internet to become an introvert. And then I actually got more extroverted as I became more comfortable on the internet. Because after I start becoming like understanding myself a lot better, I'm able to like put myself out there easier. So yeah, that's really what raised by the internet means to me.
Okay. And and also like you said you moved back around a lot, like why did you move around so much?
Yeah, I mean like when my mom and I came here we didn't really have a lot of money. So we our family, extended family, are all restaurant owners. Like Chinese takeout. So we would just work at the restaurants.
Okay. Oh, so you would just travel from place to place?
Yeah. Whenever. Yeah, like, because you don't really want to stay with, like, a family member for, like,
that's
years.
Yeah,
so, like, you also don't want, you feel bad, right?
Yeah.
So you're like, yeah, I'll just be here, work for them for a little bit. I'm in the back peeling shrimp.
Yeah.
You know, that's really how a lot of Chinese takeout is. Like, you'll probably see a lot of kids out front taking orders and stuff. Just, one, because they don't really have a childcare capability, but two, Chinese parents just want their child closer, and sometimes they don't have the means to for like childcare. So, for most of my part, like I grew up in a kitchen.
In the kitchen.
Yeah.
So in the restaurant, and I know you, you know, you have a restaurant, you know, mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah.
What is it called?
Show Me Nudes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, where is that located?
Chino Hills.
So yeah, check it out if you're in Chino Hills. But so it's cool how like it kind of comes full circle. You used to grow up in that, and then now you sold meme products, like e-commerce, but now you're getting back into restaurants, so
yeah.
It's like pretty cool how it's coming
yeah,
together.
It's a circle of life.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, you said you grew up on the internet, and you had your first, you know, big following, like page on Tumblr, right?
Yeah.
That's when you started. So, from Gaia Online to, how'd you find your way to Tumblr, and kind of...
Oh, so Tumblr was kind of like a thing that my friend just introduced me to. Tumblr's like a thing like you don't really tell your friends about. Like on Instagram, you're like, hey, follow me on Instagram. But no one really says, follow me on Tumblr. It's more of like a private community. And it was kind of like where I found privacy. And in some sense, I found a lot more friends there. Because it was kind of a platform for us to like share like our interests and our feelings. The way that you look at it is that like on Instagram, you want to show people what you have. And then on Tumblr is where you like share more like personal things. So I found like that to be more of a comforting place for me to dabble in. And then my friend was like, hey, join here and then I'll help you gain a lot of followers because he had a lot of followers at the time. And all of a sudden I got to like 100,000, got to like 200,000, and then eventually amassed like multi-million network of followers. And when you're 16-year-olds with 200 million, or not 2 million followers,
yeah,
it's a lot of power.
Yeah, you were 16.
Yeah,
two million.
Yeah, it's a lot of power. So,
did you know how powerful that was at the time, or were you just
yeah? Like, it's like a religion. It's basically like a religious following.
Yeah.
But
what
obviously,
what was the niche?
It was comedy.
Comedy niche.
Yeah, so it was kind of like my nature because I like to entertain people. I like, I think my personality can be more defined as like, comedy. I like to make people laugh. I joke around a lot. If you're around me, I'm joking like 50% of the time. So like having like a comedy content blog was kind of nature. It was kind of like me being myself,
yeah,
but also creating and making new content for people.
So for people to enjoy following. So.
Yeah.
From Tumblr, then you, like I think you said starting at 15 was when you first started like getting, like hustling, like selling candy and trying to do everything you can to make money, right?
Yeah.
What was it like
selling physical goods versus, you know, digital goods, like
physical goods in school is kind of more of a, it wasn't about money. Selling things in school was a social thing for me. Like, it was an icebreaker to meet friends. Like, yeah, like, I have gum to sell to you. Like, I have candy to sell to you. Like, now we just became friends.
Instead of giving it for free, charge. Oh, wow.
I don't know, like, sometimes I give it out for free, but, like, I think, like, if you can make a business out of it, why not? So I think internally I always had, like, that hustle spirit to, like, I'm going to make money wherever I can. Like, I was importing things from China at the time and selling it in school, not even knowing that was, like, what other people are doing already. Like, for me, that was, like, second nature. I'm like, I can get it cheaper for China. I'm just
dropshipping.
Yeah, like, like, we didn't even know what that was back then, but I was doing it.
How did you import it from China at that young age? Like, there was an Alibaba?
There was, like, other, like, similar sites. They're a lot smaller, and I was selling on eBay. Like, I started eBay really early, too. Oh, okay. Yeah, so this was, like, before Shopify was really mainstream.
How much did you make as a 15-year-old?
Thousands.
Thousands?
Thousands, which is good enough for a 15-year-old that doesn't have any expense.
Of course.
It wasn't, like, a scalable thing, like, or, I mean, it would have been. I just never thought of it that way. Because for me, it was more just, I want to make friends.
Okay.
And then slowly dabble into making my own online store through Shopify. And then using 2 million followers to market it.
Okay.
And then...
Well, you're talking about the Holy Meme Bible, right?
Yeah. So that was like, I think I started Meme Bible around when I was 18.
Yeah. And so this one has, like, you know, basically the hottest memes of the year. Which you release in November, right?
Every year in November.
And then, you know, there's like Swole Kardashian.
The way they really like summarize this book is more of like a yearbook. Like every single year we release like the most iconic and memorable memes into a coloring activity book. So it's not just a coloring book. Like we do word search, crossword puzzles, Where's Waldo. And then we do a lot of cultural integration. Like we made our thank you page as a Coachella poster because Coachella was really big that year. Yeah. So it's like, my thought was like, how can I summarize the year's best memories into a book that people can actually enjoy? And like, a lot of people are like, it's cheesy or whatever, but they're not looking at it from like an emotional standpoint. Like this is a good yearbook. Like it's a good thing for you to like look back and be like, 2018 was a great year. Here's this what happened and I can actually engage with it. So that was kind of like my purpose of making it. Like I wanted to make something that people can remember and to kind of capture their happy moments within the year. And I think memes is a really good way to indicate someone's happiness because for me it's more of a communication tool. It entertains people, it makes people happy, it spreads message. So it's like, that's probably like the best vehicle for me to do my products on.
Okay, so you saw it more as like, I mean, people do attach emotions to memes, even though that sounds funny, right? So like to comedy, they might associate with like a fun time they had sending it to a friend or something like that. So how did you, so for the coloring book, I feel like mostly kids would, you know, I mean, coloring books are for kids mostly, but like, did you have like a target market? Because I know you said before, like you didn't have, it wasn't a tested product. There was nothing like this in the market. So you didn't even know if it's, you know, going to be good in the market. Mm-hmm. So did you have a target market idea for this? And like,
Well, there's definitely a product that I drew inspiration from, which is a adult coloring book where they color in curse words, like the F word or like whatever, into like really pretty drawings and people coloring in. And I think they made like $1 million off that book. And it was only for adults. And I'm just like, okay, that's a really cool concept, but how can I turn that into something that I am good at? Yeah. So it wasn't like a brand new invention. Like definitely concepts like this, like a novelty coloring book for adults exist. It's really about like turning into, integrating your own elements into it, which is for me was memes.
Okay. And for you, did memes like, did it have like a big impact in your life?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it sounds a lot, you know, funny for a lot of people, but like memes was kind of how I learned about culture. And I think it's a really good communication tool to learn about a particular country's culture. Like think about all the politic memes, all the like the cultural memes that we make about rappers, about music, about our everyday life. It's a good way for you to get an insight into like how a particular society is. And like Chinese memes and like Asian memes in general and like American memes and European memes are a whole different. Because memes are really, if you think about it from like a fundamental level, it's a communication tool. It's a drawing. It's like emojis. So when you think of it that way, you're like, okay, this is a really good language for me to understand if I want to understand a country's culture. So for me growing up, looking at like funny memes, even though they have evolved a lot since 2000s, was a really good way for me to learn.
So like, essentially you said each country has their own memes. What do you think is, can you give a couple examples that shows like how, you know, because America has these kinds of memes, mm-hmm. it shows this about America, or mm-hmm. because Europe has this, these kinds of memes, like,
I think the best memes are relatable. Like, it has to be easily understood. Like, recently there's a big Facebook group called like Subtle Asian Traits, and it was all Asian memes. And the reason why that group became so large, in my opinion, was that it's very relatable. Like, people grew up with similar experiences, but they don't really know, because they didn't know that like hundreds of million other kids around the world also experience, you know, this type of thing. And then now that you have memes to communicate that, people are like, yeah, I also got spanked as a kid. Or like, my parents also got mad at me because I didn't get good grades as a kid. Or like, whatever, right?
Yeah.
So I think that memes are really good at communicating experiences, and the best ones are usually relatable.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have a couple products here, like several ones, like the Holy Meme Bible, the cookbook like we mentioned, but yeah, I think... So, you know, growing up as a, you know, teenager and having all these thoughts as an entrepreneur, like, I mean, nowadays I feel like entrepreneurship is, like, glamorized, but there's been, like, entrepreneurs since, you know, the beginning of time, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's just, I guess, a mindset, or, like, how do you think it's a mindset? Do you think it's, you're born with it? Do you think it's your environment? Like, what do you think defines an entrepreneur? Or
I don't think there's, like, a list,
yeah.
a checkbox for like if you want to be an entrepreneur, and if you're falling through a checkbox, you're just becoming like everyone else. I think a lot of them goes down to mindset and the way that you perceive things, and also your drive. I think there's a lot of entrepreneurship going on right now because it's kind of a trend. It's like the next big thing. Yeah, like all the motivational speaker, and like there's nothing wrong with that. Like by all means, do your own thing. And I think the best time for you to try to become an entrepreneur is as young as you could. Because when you're young, you don't have a lot of accountability. You don't have a mortgage. You don't have wife and kids. If you fail, you can just go back to, you know, living with your mom. No shame in that. But like, I think what defines an entrepreneur is their will to get through obstacles that get thrown at them. Because some people are really meant to get through harsh shit. Like they're meant to... they're meant to be resilient towards hardships, and some people are just comfortable becoming doing a 9-to-5.
Yeah.
So I think what makes a really good entrepreneur are people that can take on the obstacles that are thrown at them, uh-huh. and really are able to think of great ideas and resolutions on the spot.
What's an example of something, I guess, that was thrown at you that you turned it into, like, a solution, or how you came up with a solution to it?
I mean, like, we're completely bootstrapped. Like, we have never fundraised. So, like, money has always been, like, an issue for us. So, like, for me, every single day we have this issue. It's like, can we spend more money to grow? But that's at the risk of if it doesn't work out, then we're kind of screwed.
Uh-huh.
'Cause we just never fundraised. Like, yeah. We've always ran on like the money that we have right now, or the money that we're earning through our income.
Yeah.
So like it was a constant struggle. Like every single day, there's like an issue. Like there's big bills. There's like this big expense coming up, and every day there's a new solution. Like we can take on new clients. We can like do things differently here. We can optimize our funnel here to make more money. So it's, I think for me that's why it's fun, because it's challenging and it never really gets old.
Because there's always new things coming up
yeah.
you gotta solve.
So. Yeah, and like, yeah, money's always like a big issue for businesses, and like they don't like to admit it, but like, I'm gonna be real. Like, because we're not fundraised, and because we're all like working out of our own pockets, money has always been an issue. Yes, we're doing fine right now, but it's not like we can go out and like splurge.
Yeah.
Like, we have to be very cautious about it.
Yeah.
But I also think that's what makes us great, because when you don't have a lot of money, you're able to be a lot more creative.
Resourceful, yeah.
Oh yeah, we're very creative in like how we market our stuff. We always try to think of ways to make viral campaigns, make our stuff go viral, so like newspaper can market us instead of paying for Facebook ads. So it's like I even got a bear to model our lashes recently, because I don't want to pay for a model. Yeah, a teddy bear.
A teddy bear to model your lashes?
Yeah.
Also, you use a teddy bear, like, and you just put lashes on?
Yeah, like.
Oh. Oh, that's so creative. But this is way more, like, notable than just, like.
Yeah. And in a sense, this becomes another marketing campaign.
Exactly. Yeah.
But, like, by not spending money on models, we save, like, hundreds of thousands or thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that it's okay for you to not have a lot of money in the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And I think a lot of people that listen to this podcast are in the same position.
Uh-huh.
And this really shows too, like, you can be a lot more creative when you have a lot less resources.
That's true.
It makes you think of things that are outside of the box.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like about it. Like, I can always constantly think of new ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. So I guess, so for you, were you always thinking of like I'm sure you felt maybe a little different growing up, just because of, like, first of all, your mindset, and also you mentioned, like, you were meant to go through hardships, like resilience stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm sure among your peers, not a lot of them have had that same kind of mindset and drive. So, like, what was it like growing up, you know, around, and you moved around a lot on top of that, so it's like, it's even more and more, like, things, you know, like, added onto you. And as a kid, you know, you might feel lost. You might feel like, why am I different? Like, why am I so, like, why do I not think the same like everyone else, you know? And so, did you have moments like that? And, like, did you have moments where you felt isolated?
I never really felt I fit in. Like, I didn't play sports.
Mm-hmm.
I like playing basketball. I like swimming. But I was never, like, in a sports team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm athletic enough for that. I didn't, like, watch particular shows. I didn't, like, do certain things. So, like, for me, I always felt like I was kind of different from other kids.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I'm, like, a hipster or whatever. Like, I literally felt like I didn't have a talking point for with them. Because I always liked to work. Like, for me, growing up was working. From working in a kitchen at 8 years old to, like, working online to sell things on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was a constant work.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, sometimes it's not for money. Sometimes it's just for growth.
Yeah.
In the beginning of my career, I did a lot of things for free.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, like, my hobby was working, but, like, not working as in, like, in people's head, like, 9-to-5 work, but, like, for me, doing all these things, learning it, and growing as a process was something that I really, truly enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And not a lot of people share that. Like, you can't really go and be like, hey, is your hobby also working? Like, no one really thinks about that.
Yeah.
So it's also, like, it's really hard for me to find people that are similar-minded. So, like, when I finally found a close group of friends that are also having that common ground, I really cherish them. Like, I want to grow them. I want to help them with my resources. So that's why, like, I think lately my circle of friends became a lot smaller for the best, honestly. I think having less people in your circle means you have a lot less to manage, a lot less distraction.
True.
And growing up, you want the most friends.
Yeah.
Like, I think
you want to be popular.
Yeah. As I grow older, it's about, like, really about quality over quantity. And, like, people always say that, like, whenever you hear, like, a podcast, they're like, yeah, quality over quantity. And I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. But, like, once you live through it, you're like, that's very true.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the less people that you have, the less distraction, the less chance of, like, any drama or whatever, right?
Mm.
So I really came to appreciate having a small group of really quality people around me.
Nice. And, you know, what would you say are, you know, I'm sure a lot of kids or even adults look at you and they're like, man, this guy, Jason Wong, he's, like, killing it. Like, he has, like, 5 different companies already. He has, like, a restaurant. And, you know, for you, like, what is, like, your secret sauce to success? Like, what do you think? And not just success in terms of, like, money, but in terms of growth, in terms of being, like, the best version of yourself. Like, what would you say has kept you on that track and path of, like, being the best version of yourself and succeeding? Like, even with all this, like, someone else could have had the same idea, but not be successful, you know? So what helped you be successful? Like, what are some of the?
I think it comes down to two things. One, you really have to stand out and be unique. And like, yeah, there's a bunch of people selling meme games. Like, there's people doing better than me. But I stand out by having better marketing. I stand out by having better branding, a totally different product. A lot of people also do influencer marketing like me, but I do it better because I'm able to get on like newspaper. I'm able to make very natural looking ads that a lot of people can't make. Like, I'm able to do a lot more unique things and brand myself as a guy that can do unique things. Because I don't think I'm the best at doing any of these, honestly. But I think I'm good at differentiating myself from others by branding, either branding my companies or like branding myself. I think the second point would be really the determination to get through things. Because the reason why I always bring up like determination is because a lot of people get hit once by like one failure and they're like, okay, yeah, I'll come back up. And they get hit by a second one. They're like, okay, this is a sign that I should just not go through with it. I think what makes a really great entrepreneur and really successful one by means of wealth or means of growth, it's like, how many times are they willing to get back up after they fail? And I have failed a lot of times. Like, I've sold 3 companies, but I've also failed like 3 or 4 companies, right? And I think how you measure your wins is not about like how many wins there is, it's how many like losses you have overcome. And for me, that's one thing that I've always looked at. And by doing so, I'm a lot more positive. It's like when you start seeing your failures as lessons, you become a lot more optimistic and you're a lot less afraid of failing, because every failure that I've had in the past few years led to me to do something better in another area. So having that mindset definitely helped a lot.
So don't see it as like an obstacle that's like impossible, but see it as like it's a redirect, redirect to something better.
Almost. Yeah, I think like you constantly have to have the mindset, it's like, okay, if this fails, how can I take the spare parts to make a better thing? Like, yeah, like my car broke down. Can I take the spare part to make a better car?
Okay.
Right? Like, having that mentality helped me a lot because, one, we're not funded. So, like, we literally have to take the spare parts. Like, we can't just buy a new car.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? So, like, I think that analogy works out a lot because I personally really like cars. So, like, whenever I think of things, I like to visualize. Okay. Like, I'm a very visual person. So, I'm like, okay, this company failed. Can I take the technology? Can I take the team? Can I take the data to make something better? Okay, this thing didn't work out. What are some lessons that we learned from it? What are some consumer behaviors that we've learned to adjust for our next campaign? Failure is plentiful. Like, no one really shows their failures, obviously, for the reasons. But for me, I always like to talk about failures. Because, I mean, like, what's the point of bragging about wins? Like, people can Google it and be like, yeah, this guy did a lot of great things. Yeah, but, like,
you don't know the backstory.
Yeah, like, I think the backstories is what make you a more interesting person. Because I don't want to be, like, another one of those guys that has, like, oh, feature in Forbes, a feature in, like, whatever. Like, okay, yeah, that's cool. Like, you did it. But, like, how many times have you, like, not gone on newspaper because you failed? I think that's what makes you a more interesting person.
So on that note, what's some of your biggest, I guess, moments of failure and maybe even like depression or loss and feeling like, I don't know if I could go on anymore, and but you still got up, and how did you do that? But yeah, we'll just start from there.
Oh, really funny thing. This is pretty recent. Making this game was really expensive. Meme bands.
Yeah.
I think R&D cost total was like 6 figures. Just like making everything, like paying employees and like all the company expenses. And we were never really like a cash positive company. Like, we had a lot of money and assets, and we're constantly like in R&D, we're constantly marketing. So like having that extra expense was like, okay, a dent. And then when we first launched the game, it actually flopped. We launched it on Kickstarter because we thought that it would be a good idea to launch a Kickstarter. And then we didn't even meet our goal in 22 days. Wow. And then we're like, well, fuck. Because the way that I like to start my businesses is to like invest as little money as possible, basically pre-order. So what I like to do is that I like to order 1 or 2 samples of this game, market it, Kickstarter, whatever, and I use that money to like buy more inventory. But this is around like October, and like to make this game, it takes 45 days. So like our biggest season is Christmas, so you want to get it in by November. Because our campaign failed in October, it means we don't have enough money to order stuff for Christmas.
Yeah.
And then at that time, I was like, okay, do I want to take a gamble and like put in $100,000 to buy like, you know, all that units of Mean Band just for Christmas, even though our Kickstarter campaign failed? Do I want to take a gamble and do it? And I did. And I placed an order for it and put in another $100,000 towards Mean Band's inventory.
Yeah.
And then that also like flopped. Like none of our campaigns were working. Facebook ads were like negative. Influencer ads wasn't working. And none of it worked. And so we're like, okay, we're like down $200,000.
Why is it? Why do you think it didn't
work? I don't know. That's the thing. That's like one of the biggest mystery. Like
you have influencers on board. You've marketed before the Mean Bible.
Yeah, like we've done well with other stuff. I think price points is one, because this is literally double of what Mean Bible costs. When a product is under $20, it kind of fits into like impulse buy. Like you're a lot likely to buy something out of like impulse or like sense of urgency if it's under $20. But once it's like $30 and then plus shipping costs.
Yeah.
One thing that we didn't factor was like how expensive it would take to ship a product like this. Like to ship this across America, it would cost $950. So all inclusive, even like the fulfillment cost, right out the box, people have to pay $40-some.
Okay.
And that's not an impulse buy anymore. Like people have to think about it.
Yeah.
So our conversion was really low, and like we just weren't moving any units. I think we sold like, there was a time like where I was like, oh wait, we just sold 6 units. Okay.
6 units. Yeah.
Like that, it's a really bad feeling. Like I think the worst feeling as like creator, as an artist, is when people don't appreciate your thing. And I would see like, this is an art. Like creating product from scratch, designing every aspect of it, is an art. It's an art form. Like, you know, agree with it or not. Like for me, I have to put a lot of time in designing it and developing it. And for you to spend all that, like I don't even want to talk about money, but like the time and effort to make a product and then it fails.
True.
It sucks. Like so it really sucked.
How about, so I know this is kind of like one of your first products that came after your successful products, but how about before, maybe even before Mean Bible or before your first success, like when were the moments that like you felt like being down and felt like maybe this path isn't for me, you know? Did you have any of those times?
I had a company that failed. Even after securing investment, I had a t-shirt company called 50, and the premise of the company was that we donate a fifth of each order to help save shelter animals, like homeless animals. Great cause, whatever, right? And then for, you know,
whatever.
But it just didn't work out. Like like it's a good brand, I put a lot of thought into it, but it just, we didn't have enough marketing budget and like resources to really market it to where it should be. And so we just kind of like ran out of like the financial runway.
Okay.
Like it's a good brand, like I sold it like to a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, I just don't think I have the capacity to take care of it.
Uh-huh.
And when that fell, I was like, okay, that's my first failed company. It sucks. Because I pour like an entire year into it. And that was before like Mean Bible. So like for me to put in all my money that I made through marketing into a product company and it fell. So it was like, it's kind of shitty.
It hurts, yeah.
But thankfully, like Mean Bible came in and then we made like $250,000 in a week. Yeah. And then, like, using that money, we make more meme products, like the ramen noodle condoms and a cookbook. And then, thankfully, the meme bands, we have, like, very successful content because we have really good creative partners.
Okay.
And then it started making, like, 10 grand a day.
10 grand a day.
Yeah. Okay. So from selling, like, just 6 units to, like, selling, like, hundreds of units a day.
Yeah.
That goes to show that you have to be, like, determined to get through all the obstacles.
Yeah.
Because imagine if I just, like, gave up and be like, yeah, I'll just take the $200,000 loss.
Yeah, yeah.
And just eat it up, right?
Yeah.
So, like, what makes someone successful is, like, how many times are they willing to, like, get through all the obstacles? Like, are they able to formulate good ideas to overcome it? Are they able to think on a spot and be like, okay, this is something we need to do immediately to change the course of the outcome?
Where's going?
And that's what we did. Like, we didn't stick around and bury your head and cried about it. Like crying doesn't make you money.
how is it, you know, I'm curious to know, because you're successful successful in like the world's eyes. I don't like how they always think of it as like money. Like money wise you're good, but you gotta think holistically, like are your relationships good, is your family good, is your health good, everything, you know? And so like how do you balance that, especially as a young entrepreneur, like and a young business owner, like, how do you, I mean, you must be good at managing, you know, that you've done something, you know, right? So, like, how do you, what is it like for you to manage everything else as a young, you know, entrepreneur?
I think if I were to, like, be completely truthful, did not manage spending quality time with family members that matter. And then I wasn't paying attention to my own health. I was having, like, a lot of depressive episodes. Mm. I was eating, like, junk food. Like, overall, just, like, failing in every different aspects. But I was doing good in business. Like, and people, like, are like, yeah, this guy's doing great. Like, he's successful or whatever, right? But then, like, they don't see, like, all the other parts of the house, like, collapsing.
Yeah.
And then I think, like, one day I woke up and I was like, well, what the fuck am I doing? Mm. Right? Like, you can have the most money in the world, but, like, if your health is failing and you're not having any valuable relationships, what's the point of having all those numbers in your bank account, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not like I woke up with, like, $1 billion. Like, I woke up with enough money to be comfortable, and then I come to a realization that I am just not valuing my time to the right places. So, like, nowadays I travel a lot more in between, like, Hong Kong and Canada to visit my dad and mom, respectively. Spend a lot more time with, like, family members. Set up, like, better communication channels with them, like, through WhatsApp or, like, WeChat, and overall just a lot more involved in everyone's lives, and making sure that I'm able to give them more quality time and my attention, and also, like, appreciate the fact that I'm able to get this far because of all these people. So definitely all these years, I think, like, even though, like, growing up I knew that I was mature and I thought I was mature, becoming, like, really, really mature was, like, the past year when, like, when everything kind of, like, falls and you're like, well, like, when I don't have any more money in the bank account, like, when I was failing with this product, like, who else was there for me? Like, which kind of friend was there, like, getting me through all this hardship? And these are people that money can't buy. Like, even when I had no money, even when I had money, these people stuck around. And that's the people that I wanted to be around.
Just shout them out by name right now.
Oh, too many.
But, no, yeah, for sure. I think a lot of people, I mean, we all need money, but then at the end of the day, like, money can't buy friends, right? They can't buy family, stuff like that. But are there any practices that you practice every day, like rituals to help, like, get you for success, or any, like, planners or things that you plan out that help you get ahead in life, or, you know, like, or tools, maybe even websites or apps, whatever.
Recently I started using Asana, and it's a project management tool, and previously I was using, like, Trello and, like, Basecamp or whatever.
Is it A-S-A-U-N-A?
Asana. Asana.
Is that like Airtable or different?
No, Airtable is more of, like, a organization tool. It's like a more of, like, a Airtable is more like Excel on crack. Asana is essentially like it's a to-do list. It's also, like, a project management, and you're able to set, like, priorities for each thing, and then you're able to assign tasks to people. So, like, when you're running a company with 8 team members, and you're
8,
yeah, we have 8 right now.
I thought it was 15 before.
Yeah, we also we downsized a lot because we sold a lot of our brands. Yeah, so we downsized because, like, a lot of them were contractors too, so it wasn't, like, permanent anyways. But we have 8 really great people helping us on our e-commerce side. We have marketing people. We have creative people, designers. Nice. When you're working with, like, people of all different parts of the department, you need a really good project management tool. So, like, right now I'm managing, like, 12 projects and, like, 3 teams. And all through Asana, so.
Asana. Yeah. How about, like, how do you get things done? Do you have, like, a to-do, like, how do you plan your day? How do you plan your months and every, like, do you have a vision board, you know?
We have, like, a monthly goal board for, like, the company. We don't I don't plan things a month ahead. Like, I barely plan things a week ahead. Like,
really?
I feel like that's a lot of pressure on yourself.
That's true.
Like, you need to do this by this time. Like, yeah, like, if there's...
Do what you need to do today.
I mean, that's kind of the freedom of, like, entrepreneurship. Like, you set your own schedule. And, like, if I feel like I can do it this way, then I do it. But, like, of course, for some people, they need to plan months ahead. And so be it, right? I have a to-do list. I have a daily to-do list. But sometimes I just use a sticky note.
Sticky note?
Sticky notes are things... Like, if I write something on a sticky note, I have to do it done by the end of the day.
Wow, wow.
Yeah, and so I just cross it out.
Thing. Wow.
Yeah, so like sticky notes are basically where I, like every morning I will look at my to-do list on on Asana.
Yeah.
And then I put down like 5 or 6 things that I have to do to get done like today. And then if I get those things done, I can go to sleep.
Okay.
And then sometimes like when you're in the zone, you kind of want to keep working. So like you keep working.
Yeah, yeah.
And then sometimes like throughout the days after you do those things, you have more things to do. Yeah, you ever like get to like one of those days? Like, yeah, those days happen like pretty frequently.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like a never ending task.
Yeah. But that's, it's crazy because especially like if you're running several companies and like you gotta be good at prioritizing and knowing what you need to do today, you know, so because you have limited time.
Yeah.
So just, I guess for you, you use Asana and you just kind of know in your head what you need to get done and delegate and stuff.
Asana, even my notes pad on the iPhone.
Okay.
Yeah, or like any note taking app on any phone.
Okay.
It's really simple. Like there's not like a fancy tool I use. It's really just sticky notes.
So Asana is, okay, it's just projects.
Yeah, they're projects. Okay. Yeah, like because we have a lot of e-commerce stores, and each e-commerce store has like stages of like product testings or like ads monitoring.
Anything like that.
Sometimes we're testing like 10 products at once, and then we have to separate them by stages.
Okay.
And then sometimes when we manage talent, sometimes we manage influencers.
Mm-hmm.
We manage their like ad campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
So like you can't really do that on like a sticky note.
True. Yeah, you can't put all that. And for like influencers, I know you're really good. You're already in the influencer space, so it's easier for you to reach out.
Mm-hmm.
But like, how do you? What are some best practices when you go about reaching out for influencers to help you promote? Or you know, I know relationship building is key, but like for you, how do you approach them when they're not, when you don't know them at all, you know, or what do you do?
I think the best key thing is to like treat them with respect. Like a lot of, like the reason why I say this is because a lot of people talk to influencers like brands, like they immediately set a barrier between them. Like, hey, we are a brand and you are an influencer.
And we pay you and you do this.
Yeah,
and
like
that's it.
Immediately, like you set a barrier.
It's a business transaction.
Yeah, you never do that.
That's true.
Like, because influencers get contact dozens of times a day. Like, you don't even understand the inbox of a influencers until like you really see it. Like, you can't really explain it. Like, their other inbox on their Instagram, it's like hundreds, okay? Like, it's like half of them are guys hitting them up, or like, and the other half are like businesses. Like, you can't just be like one of those people. Like, you have to stand out.
So how would you go about doing that?
Our language is very simple. Like, we speak to them like we speak to our friends.
Mm-hmm.
And we are a lot more inviting.
Okay.
And we don't really approach them on like a business first basis. We approach them as like, here's an intro, like, this is what we do. Like, if you find us interesting, like, I want to like talk to you more about like other opportunities that we have or like other stuff that we're working on. Like, don't be like, oh, here are like some of our campaigns right now that I think it'll be great for you to
you
run.
You would fit in this slot.
Yeah, yeah, like,
this time.
Yeah, for us,
Fashion Nova.
Yeah, for us, it's like, hey, you know, this is something that I'm working on right now. Like, and we also thought that you might be interested or whatever. Like, oh, you're also doing fitness. We're also doing fitness. Like, try to find like a common ground. And speak to them like your friends.
Yeah. Provide value if you can.
Yeah. If you could, like, be like, hey, like, we also have like we have a lot of influencers that will be great for you to work with. Like, if you want to collab with them, we can connect you. Like, don't set a barrier between yourself by like acting like a brand. Mm-hmm. Act more of like a friend, and that's really easy to say.
I think that's easy to say, but like, especially this is why it's so different. Because you're coming from like millennial, like new generation of entrepreneurs, as opposed to corporate, they would just send it out probably in mass, just, you know, just to use them basically. But then this is more of like relational, you know, helping each other as friends eventually, right? Mm-hmm. But
And the way that people promote our stuff is very different too. Like, when people promote our stuff, it's not very branded. We have a very solid policy for Dolashes is that you should only like promote our stuff if you really like it. Like, we'll send you free stuff, like, by all means, we'll send you the stuff, but like, don't promote it if you don't like it. Like, and like, for people, when they make posts for us, it seems completely natural. It doesn't seem like, hey, this is an ad, this is my 15% off
hashtag ad.
Yeah, like, none of it, like, it's naturally integrated into like their normal content.
Okay.
And that was makes us like very approachable.
Okay.
Is nice. That we're really brand friendly.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So what are your goals now? Like, what's your, you know, I know we kind of talked about the meme bands, but like, where do you want to be? Like, what's your big goal and vision of what you want to do and be and all that?
So, I'll say, like, the meme products was kind of like a chapter of my life. Currently, I'm trying to sell them. We're in, like, trying, in, like, acquisition mode.
Uh-huh.
I'm working on more cosmetic stuff, things, mm-hmm. things that I find interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Not that, like, I really, really like cosmetics. It's because I've never done cosmetics before.
Mm.
So, like, the idea of, like, never doing something and, like, it being, like, an open space for me really intrigued me. Like, I'm like, yeah, I want to, like, learn exactly how to do it and just, like, conquer it.
Wow.
So, like, so that's why I want to get into, like, beauty space, because beauty is also really big.
Yeah.
So for me, it's always, like, finding something that I've never done before and see if I can do it.
Wow.
Like, restaurants. Like, I've never managed a restaurant. I've never started up a restaurant. But then I started getting into it and, like, understand it and try to do it. So for me, like, I've never really done all these stuff for, like, money or, like, the idea that maybe it'll make me a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
I always approach it with the idea that I'm going to learn a lot by doing it, because I've never done anything for it. Like, for example, for Ding Tank, we release a line of bath bombs.
Mm.
We have a line of candles. And I learned, like, chemical components of bath bombs.
You just love learning.
Yeah.
That's
well, like,
awesome.
When you make products, you have to be really confident behind, like, what you make.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, like, you know, for example, bath bombs, like, something that gets in contact with your skin.
Yeah.
You want to learn everything. So I think what sets me apart from, like, other product designers, or, like, not product designer, like, e-commerce people, is that, like, mm-hmm. I really truly care about the stuff that I sell.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very proud and confident about the things that I sell. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of people are, like, oh, yeah, I don't want to tell you what I sell.
Mm-hmm.
like we're, like, all in private. But, like, for me, I'm really proud.
Yeah.
I put a face behind, like, everything that I sell.
Yeah.
Because, like, hey, if you don't like it, you can come to me directly. Like, I'm not going to hide behind an email.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's fun for me. The creative process, the challenges, and also, like, making things that serves a purpose in people's life, rather that is entertaining them or, like, helping them be more confident in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Really just seeing people use myself, it's really fulfilling, and I think that's more than, like, better than any money that you could have made out of it.
Like, the impact that you've made on someone's life. Yeah,
I really like that.
For sure. Yeah, well, before we wrap up, you know, I just want to say, like, do you have any, like, you know, for example, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who have great ideas, or maybe, like, they haven't tried it out of fear or something like that. Like, how do, you know, and each person is different, right? Like, for you, it's, like, doing this memes, internet, like, you know, influencer marketing, but how can someone else out there find their passion, find what they love to do, and maybe they're miserable at their 9-to-5, but I'm not saying 9-to-5 is bad, because people think, oh, 9-to-5 sucks, entrepreneurship is cool, but it's not the case. You just kind of have to know, like, who you are, right? You have to know, like, what do you want to do? Like, do you like that? If you like that, then keep doing that, but, like, how would you help people find out who they are, their passion, and, like, follow it? Like, what would be something?
I think really take baby steps, and my reasoning is that, like, entrepreneurship isn't something that you just want to jump into it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're working at 9-to-5 right now, by all means, if it makes you happy, go for it. But if you're working at 9-to-5 right now, maybe you can get started by having baby steps of, like, start assigning new stuff for yourself to do.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean is that Google, for example, you know, the reason why Gmail was actually invented is because Google has this policy where they allow employees a set amount of time where they can do their own stuff.
Huh.
It's like the autonomy time.
Huh.
And that means that this is work hour, you get paid for work, but you can make whatever you want.
Huh.
Google Maps and Gmail was made out of that, that, like, that little autonomy time.
Wow.
So, like, these people, even though they're working at 9-to-5, they got the power to start making their own stuff. They assigned their own projects, and one of them was Gmail.
And they don't get, they didn't get paid for that time where they made that?
Oh, they make, like, they're still salaried.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're paying for that time.
But they're paying for their time, but it's just free time to
do whatever
be creative.
Else. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty smart.
So, yeah. Like, I think setting, like, that same example.
Give them freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for yourself, like, even though you're working at 9-to-5 right now, is there something that you can do right now that will, like, enhance your productivity?
Yeah.
Is there a project that you feel like pertains to your interests right now that you can explore? If you're working in, like, the medical field, is there a way for you to make your workday a little bit more interesting? Like, start assigning yourself things that you can actually have control over.
Yeah.
I think control is one of the biggest things that separates like a normal entrepreneur and like a 9-to-5 employee, is that a lot of 9-to-5 employees are on like a railroad track,
mm-hmm.
and whereas like entrepreneurs actually have control. Mm-hmm. Like start having baby stuff of like having control over what you want to do, like what you do in life.
Yeah.
And like I'm not saying like go off the owner's manual and like do things and like do a medical procedure like all differently. But what I mean is like start giving yourself more control over like what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Really taking control over your passion and start integrating and like, is there something, a hobby that I can do while on the job that can make my workday a lot more interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Some people learn to code. Mm-hmm. Some people learn a new language.
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly, you start getting into like a full-on entrepreneurship.
Yeah,
so really baby stuff. Like I'm not saying like just quit your job and like be your own boss. Like really baby steps is really important because no one likes drastic changes and no one's lifestyle can be adjusted immediately to that. So like start having more control over what you do in your everyday life, whether that is a 9-to-5 job or like you're in school or whatever. Like assign more things for yourself to do and then start seeing like where you can monetize that. Some people, like the easiest way is like consulting. Like hey, like if you got really good at this thing, you can start being like a little consultant for like restaurants or like for like agencies or whatever. That's just like an example off the top of my head. Really, entrepreneurship is not like a confining thing where like there's a set amount of jobs, like you have to sell something or you have to like do something to be an entrepreneur. It's really about like having a control over how you want to like monetize your life and like having your own schedule and having your own projects.
Yeah, freedom. I think freedom, it's freedom. Really is. That's what it is. But it's hard because people, they don't know what to do. I mean, nowadays there's dropshipping, e-commerce, but like, I feel like we're not taught how to make money on our own, you know? Like, we're not really taught that. So, I mean, you've kind of figured it out. You just built your following, and then from there on, you thought of, I should do something to make money off of this, right? And
yeah, so, yeah. That was like a passion. Like, I want to make money off like memes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, it's really hard for me to just sit here and be like, here's an example of what you can do.
Yeah, because there's no 1, 2, 3, and you'll succeed.
There's no formula. Like, people, right. like,
for
how...
For you, though.
Yeah.
For you, you just kind of followed your own intuition and, like, inner voice and went from there.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, like, it's... Whenever I teach people things, I don't teach them a formula because there's really no set formula for you to become successful in something. And frankly, I don't think that if I have the formula, I'm doing it right, because I don't think I'm as successful as I want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to teach people and like tell people in general is like how to think differently, give them a new perspective and like how they approach things. Because perspective is the most important thing when you approach business. Like how you think of things and how you think of solutions is what makes you stand out from one or the other.
Okay.
There's no formula to follow. It's how you like solve your problems.
How you think.
Yeah.
Any books or resources that helped you, that helps you for that?
Funny enough, I actually get asked that like on the daily. Like people are like, what books do you read? And like I have all these books in the apartment right now, but none of them are mine.
You haven't read any of them?
No, they're all my friends. He's more of like the book person, but for me, I never really like found myself like sitting down and learning from books.
Uh-huh.
Nothing wrong with it. Like for me, I'm more of like learning on the go person, like learning by doing.
Through experience. Yeah. Cool.
Everyone has different learning techniques.
Yeah.
You know, some people are through books and they learn really well through that. For me, it's like I could never sit down and like focus on a book. I don't know why.
Okay.
Unless it's like fictional.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So, I mean, do you have a favorite book?
One book that I actually read through was The Power of Habit. And I really like it. Who's it by? I think it's on a shelf somewhere.
Oh, okay.
Let me think. It's yellow. It's called The Power of Habit, and essentially it teaches you like how habits are formed.
Yeah.
So they bring you
30
like
30 days or so, right?
There is essentially like a habit loop, and what it happens is like there's a cue.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a trigger, there's a cue, and then there's a reward.
Okay.
So like, for example, if you want to smoke, the cue is like you're an intrinsic want to smoke, and then the cue is to smoke, and then the reward is like, oh, you feel better after smoking.
Yeah.
And like after that loop gets like repeat it, you start having that habit,
it's
right?
It's like a reward system.
Yeah, but then like you can also break that habit by like changing the reward, mm-hmm. or like changing the trigger.
Yeah.
So definitely like habit, a power habit was really helpful for me because when you're an entrepreneur, you have control over your own time, uh-huh. and it's up to you to like make
the most of it.
Make your productivity a habit. Like a lot of people are like, yeah, I'll just like to follow a schedule, and by all means go for it. But when you're doing your own work, you set your own schedule, the biggest mistake a lot of people make is that they just go off the tangent and like don't make a schedule. I think it's really important for you to have like some sets of habit, to at least organize your day and like have a structured day.
Do you have habits? What habits do you have?
My habits are terrible. I sleep really late. I wake up really late.
Yeah.
I eat at like irregular times.
So what habits keep you successful? Or
I'm productive in between those times. The reason why I work really late is because I like to work alone. So like when you're like, when at 4 a.m. no one's texting you.
Yeah. Wow. So you stay up late or you wake up early?
Yeah. And then like when I talk to suppliers, they're like 4 a.m. it's like 7 p.m. there. So it literally works out for me. Nice. So I don't like to say like my schedule is perfect.
Yeah.
It's definitely bad.
Yeah.
But like having the habit to like, I think the habit's not even like about the eating schedule. The habit's like, can you get into a routine and get into a productivity routine by yourself?
Yeah.
Like no one has to be there to tell you.
Yeah.
And that's a habit that you have to form. Yeah. Not like my eating. Like I don't think that's like an example to lead.
Yeah.
But like everything else in between, I think I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah. Okay. So. So before we, you know, finish this, like, I always end with this question, and a big reason why it's this question is because, like, growing up, I didn't have, like, a lot of role models or people to look up to, and, you know, sometimes you wish as a kid you would have someone older there who could have, like, spoke, you know, wisdom into your life or advice, you know? Mm-hmm. So for you, you know, I mean, you're still young, 21, but if you could go back to, you know, 11-year-old Jason or 12, 13, 14, like whenever you felt like you're in a dark place, what would be a piece of advice or encouragement or something that you would say to yourself and maybe someone out there may be feeling as well, you know?
I think the biggest piece of advice is to know that the world is a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, thankfully, growing up, I was able to travel a lot and understand that there's different ideas and different perceptions. A lot of people I know grew up in one place. Mm-hmm. Like, they grew up in the East Coast, they grew up in the West Coast, so they only know things in those areas. Mm-hmm. And for them, that world is just that. Mm-hmm. But, like, the biggest piece of advice to myself is, like, understand that the world's constantly growing. Mm-hmm. And ideas and population and, like, ideology. Mm-hmm. And that just because you're not successful in one place doesn't mean that you won't be successful in another. The world is so big that it might work somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But what about something you would say to your younger self, like when you were young, like little Jason? If you saw little Jason today, what would be something you would tell him?
Stay on the internet. No, I mean like really trust your instincts. I think growing up, I never really had a role model. I didn't have like the perfect parent to like look after. Like neither of my parents went to college. None of my family member went to college. So like not having that great role model meant that I had to follow a lot of my own instincts. So like the best advice for myself was to like really believe in like what I think is right. Obviously that takes self-discipline. Like you have to the right like ideas to really follow your instincts. But like thankfully for me, like I always like knew right from wrong. I think like morally I was pretty good. Like I never really like went out and destroyed things or like did bad things. So maybe that piece of advice isn't very applicable to like everyone. But for me personally, I would say like it was great that I followed my instincts to like do what I want. Despite the fact that everyone else was like, yeah, just stay in college, like don't drop out or whatever. For me, I would say like leaving college was a great idea for me personally. I never tell people to drop out actually. Because something like, why would you drop out if you don't have anything accomplished? Like, I dropped out when I was making like 20K a day. So like, I say like leaving school and focusing on my business after the business was successful was a good idea. Not dropping out like just because like I want to give it a try.
Yeah.
Because there's so many uncertainties. Like you don't want to gamble that big on it sometimes. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm just playing a safe a lot of times, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Cool, cool. Thank you. All right, man. Well, thanks for coming on the show, and thank you. And check out, so where can people find you too then?
On Instagram, at Pug.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, P-U-G.
P-U-G. Okay, yeah. For sure. Awesome. Yeah, check out his stuff. Yeah, it should be on the links too. So yeah. All right. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey guys, so I hope you enjoyed this interview with Jason Wong, CEO of Wong House Ventures. And you can follow him on Instagram at Pug and me on Instagram at ray.on, E-H-N. And if this podcast has helped you in any way, please share it with your friends and family, leave a review, and also remember you can keep supporting us running this podcast by donating on Anchor so that we could keep the shows running. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you guys were encouraged, and we'll see you guys on the next episode.